Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to have your company. Thank you. This is All Sides Weekend. We get together generally the last Friday of the month to talk about what's going on with the arts and culture in Central Ohio. The answer to that statement is there's a great deal going on in the arts and culture in Central Ohio. And here to talk about us is a very distinguished group of people who are making art. Tom Katzenmeyer is helping everybody else make art. He is the president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, GCAC, an agency that we have art because of GCAC, the funding source for so many people here in Columbus. David Donsmeyer is the music director of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. Are we saying Pro Musica now and that's all? Okay, Pro Musica. We're branding. We're branding now. David is also the chief conductor and music director of the Oregon Symphony, so he is bi-coastal or commuting between these two cities. David is giving concerts this weekend in the Southern Theater that he's going to tell us more about. And I'm especially pleased to welcome, I think your first time on the show, I may be wrong,
yeah,
Kim,
I think so, yeah.
Kim Garrison Hopcraft, who is an actor, a producer, a writer, and who has a new project going on called A Woman of a Certain Age. And my wife told me I had to begin with you when she read what you sent me about the production.
Yeah.
So you have performed locally with just about every professional theater company in the sound of my voice, and certainly nationally as well. But this is something where you're putting yourself front and center to bring a message to a lot of other people. So what is the show or the production, A Woman of a Certain Age?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited that Tom is here with us today, because without the GCAC, I wouldn't be able to do this work. So thanks, Tom,
for
what you do. Yes, The Woman of a Certain Age is a year-long project that's going to be focusing on women over the age of 45 in theater and music in Columbus. So I'm really excited. I have some amazing, talented women involved with me. I wasn't sure that I was going to get a lot of, you know, excitement about it, but so far I have about 25 women here in the Columbus, just in Columbus alone, mm-hmm. of women actors and singers over 45 that are involved in the project.
And we'll talk about it more as the show progresses, but just generally, what will you all be doing?
Yeah, so we have a kickoff cabaret that happens on February the 8th at Understory, and that is also going to bring to light lots of women musicians and also singers. And we do have some men that are helping us out too, because we do have...
Don't talk about that.
And then we're going to be doing 3 play readings over the course of the year, and a full-length production by the end of the year. And all of the shows have to have 60% of the characters have to be women over the age of 45.
So are we having original work?
No original works.
Really?
Yes,
okay.
No original works this year, I'll
okay.
say.
This is the kickoff year for A Woman of a Certain Age, which
yeah.
sounds like a year-long festival of, that may be the wrong word, but really a, I don't know, I mean it's something...
Yes.
Going, a continuum, a spectrum.
It's a movement, right, this
yeah.
year that's highlighting these women.
Kim Garrison Hopcraft is an actor and a producer, a writer, and she's putting together, first of all, a cabaret February 8th.
February 8th, yes.
A Woman of a Certain Age, and that is a launch to a year-long at least, probably more.
Hopefully.
Festival there. David Donsmeyer is here. He hasn't been here in a long time, so I'm delighted. Got the whole new look going on, which is great for radio. We're loving that. Tell me, what is Pro Musica?
You're not going to tell the people what the new look is?
Well, you can guess. But anyway, it's very distinctive. But
yeah.
What's Pro Musica? Reintroduce us to Pro Musica.
Reintroduce to Pro Musica. I mean, Pro Musica is by and large a chamber orchestra, but it's also one of the best chamber orchestras in the U.S.
When you say chamber orchestra, what do you mean?
It's a chamber orchestras are a bit smaller than symphony orchestras. We play a little bit different repertoire. We focus on, you know, classical music up to a certain period, and then contemporary music. But I think Pro Musica has morphed in the last 10 years under Janet Jens and my leadership into, yeah, really a group that's like renowned in the U.S. We have musicians from all over the U.S. Like our musicians, some are from Columbus, some are from driving distance, some are flying in and coming together. And yeah, I think we have really kind of like broken through the glass ceiling of being one of the highest level chamber orchestras in the whole nation.
Well, you and Janet Chen brought them there. I mean, because they were always very good. They've been around since I have, and that's a long time.
Yeah.
Probably before either of you were in Columbus, or you were in third grade, probably when I started working here. And they were always quite good, and they always. Yeah. But really, they really got you guys kick-started it about at least 10 or 12 years ago.
I think it was a fortunate. Coming together of many things. Janet was there. She's like, you know, she's one of the best CEOs in the music world.
Janet Chen is the best arts administrator
I've ever encountered.
Yeah, I'm serious.
I didn't want to say it because I work with her, but that's true.
No, you know, I've said that publicly, and I've been around.
Good,
I mean,
good.
Yes.
I'm happy that you say it. Yes. You know, it's true.
Tom
Katzenmeier was one of the first people I met in Columbus. He was at GCSC, and it was huge support and huge enthusiasm from there, which helped a lot. And you know, about right timing, certain things just shook out really well. So I think it was a mix of us being there, good fortune, you know, how it is in life. You know, you kind of do what you do, and then you hope, you know, that
the stars
luck shines.
Exactly,
the stars
literally
align. Yeah.
And Tom Katzenmeier, the president and CEO of GCAC, this is going to be Christmas without Santa Claus, because Tom Katzenmeier is retiring after a 12-year tenure at the helm of the city's premier funding source for the arts. First of all, give us just a review of what GCAC is and where the money comes from.
Sure. We are a funder of the arts organizations, artists, projects like Kim's. We're very proud of that. The funding source is the city's bed tax, a cultural fee on all arts, culture, sports, and entertainment in the city of Columbus, and the Franklin County Commissioners. So we're grateful to the commissioners, city council, the mayor, for all of that support.
One of the commissioners has been in the news today, and we send love to him. I'm just going to say no more about that. But we stand with him. Anyway, so GCAC, there's an application process, and there are many different categories one can fit themselves into to get funding, to apply for funding. How many categories roughly
are there? We have 17 grant programs, organizations, operating support, project support, funds for artists. We'll fund well beyond probably 1,500 artists this year.
And artists or institutions, is it individual artists or large, like the symphony or the ballet? I mean,
it's all of that.
It's all of that.
All
okay.
of that. So we would probably be your lead funder, David,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
And we, to all the arts organizations, COSI, Franklin Park, the symphony, Kappa, Ballet Met, all of that. We're the lead funder right there with all of them. We're very proud of that. And then the support that we provide for artists probably will be well beyond $2 million this year. So
an individual artist, a painter, a sculptor, a writer can apply for individual grants?
You can get money from us every year for that. It's called Funds for Artists. And the number this year is $1,200. So for supplies, professional development, all those kinds of things.
That could go a long way, yeah. I asked you this last time you were here because we were closer to it, but it's still affecting people. The last time, Tom, you were here, we were just coming out of the pandemic. People were just starting to go out. Now it's a few years later. Are we still dealing with residual from that? Or
I think a little bit. There are certain organizations that are still feeling that, trying to get the customer back out. We're seeing in the ticket fee, the cultural fee, that it is coming back. Audiences are coming back. We see it in the Broadway series.
Can't
get a ticket for that. You know, West Side Story, which is a great collaboration coming up amongst four organizations over Valentine's weekend, selling very, very well. So, but there's still residuals.
Right. Also, one of the things I wanted to ask you, Well, I'm going to ask you just to comment on that. The Ohio Theater is selling out West Side Story. You can't get a ticket to Broadway and Columbus. There is talk of a new concert hall for the symphony, and I'm wondering if you could comment on that. I believe on the bank near COSI, near the river.
It's lined up with the National Veterans Memorial Museum, right. COSI. It's that third piece of property just south of COSI. So, yes, there is a proposal for that. There is fundraising going on for that. The symphony is looking for a new CEO because Denise Regg has retired from that position. So I think that has to happen now next so they can bring somebody in that will help to raise the rest of the money for that. It is a big project. They've also been sounding out other organizations to maybe have more uses for that facility rather than just for the symphony alone.
It's my understanding that it's going to be like a 1,500-seat hall, which is ideal for a symphony orchestra.
Right,
we love the Ohio Theater, but it's too big for that.
It is.
And
if this gets built also, it would free up the Ohio to do Broadway all the time.
Which you can't get a seat to. Yeah, so yeah, maybe some of us could get seats to it. I mean, you don't argue with success. Tom Katzenmeyer is the president and CEO of GCAC, the Greater Columbus Arts Council. We'll be talking to him as the show proceeds. I want to go back a little bit to Kim Hopcraft. The last time I saw you on stage, no, it wasn't the last time, but was one of the most memorable time was when you played a woman who was based on Ethel Rosenberg. Which was one of the most devastating plays I ever saw, and you and your partner in the show. I mean, you got the silence for the whole time. People were just riveted and devastated. It was a very powerful performance. When you do something like that as an actor, I can't imagine you can afford to take that home with you and like yell at your kids and kick the dog.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that was a beautiful production directed by
Stephen Anderson.
With Catco, written by James Phillips. And yeah, those parts, I love these really heavy, beautiful, meaty roles. And I love when I can play real people. So based on the life of someone else, I get very, I am not a method actor, but I do work out all my stress from my daily life when I'm in the theater, I'm at rehearsal. And so I try very hard. You can ask my family not to take it home unless I ask them to run lines with me. But I just like to really, you know, the whole thing I love about acting and performing is that we're storytellers. We do it because we love to tell stories. And so that's what, you know, where my passion comes from.
When did you begin planning or working on A Woman of a Certain Age?
I came out of a very frustrating audition in August. And it was then when I didn't know what I was going to do, but I actually put a notice out on Facebook that just simply read, any of my female actor friends over 45 want to do something cool? And within 24 hours, I had 18 women reach out to me.
Yeah.
And then I thought, what can I do?
So that audition, did they say it to your face? Or did
no,
they just
no, not
You're
at
not
all.
You're not allowed to do that. I mean.
No. And it wasn't even that. It was just a feeling that I got in the room.
Really?
These are people that I'd worked with before, completely respect and love. But I was the oldest person in the room by 20 years.
Like I am in this building.
And I just kept thinking to myself, I'm in the wrong room. Like, this is the wrong space. I have to find the right space.
Yeah.
I wanted to create that space.
This is All Sides Weekend. We are talking about the arts and culture in Central Ohio. We're going to get specific about this weekend with David Donsmeyer at Pro Musica, with Tom Katzenmeyer, the CEO of GCAC, and Kim Garrison Hopcraft. Don't go away. We're taking a quick break.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
We are back with All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are talking about the arts and culture in Central Ohio with actor Kim Garrison Hopcraft, with Tom Katzenmeyer from GCAC, and David Donsmeyer from Pro Musica. David Donsmeyer, you have concerts Saturday and Sunday this weekend in the Southern Theater. So what are you playing?
We're going to play a piece that I don't know if it has ever been performed in Columbus, but it's from Mendelssohn, the Second Symphony, called Lobgesang. It's an incredible piece. It's unbelievably beautiful. And I don't know why more conductors are not doing it, but we are doing it. So it's a pretty much unique chance to hear it live here.
You would think Mendelssohn would be performed all the time, and most of his music is, but I've loved that piece for 50 years, and I've never heard it done live. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to this weekend. It's also, what choir? You have a chorus and an organ. Why is a chorus in a symphony?
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, Beethoven started that trend, so you can blame him for that, obviously, with his ninth. But Mendelssohn, he loved chorus. He was the as a conductor, he was the person pretty much responsible for reintroducing Bach's music to people. And so he was, you know, lots of Bach music was these cantatas and so with chorus. So he was very familiar with chorus works. And I think with this symphony, also with the text, you know, the Protestant text, he was, you know, he needed to express something. It's an interesting combination because the first three movements are without chorus. So it starts out and you think you're listening to a beautiful Mendelssohn symphony and suddenly
it's very beautiful.
Even the parts without chorus are very beautiful and, you know, fairly normal for Mendelssohn, very, very beautiful writing. And then comes this 30-minute long last movement, which makes the symphony in total 60 minutes, and the last movement is with soloists and chorus and you know, all kinds of things. It's quite fascinating. We're working with the Capitol Chorus.
Capitol University Chorus,
yeah.
Linda Hassler's chorus, yes.
Absolutely, and yes. She's a great chorus director, and the chorus is very, very good.
This is Saturday and Sunday evenings in the Southern Theater.
Yes, Southern Theater.
And look who you brought with you. You just brought...
Yes, by chance, here's Janet Chen, executive director. No, sorry, CEO.
So you're going to share a mic, and we want to say hello to Janet Chen and ask Janet Chen about Pro Musica and your view on the arts in Columbus, since we have Mr. Katzenmeier here, and what's up for the future?
Well, it's happy to be here, so thank you. I mean, it's been so great to hear all the energy and the conversations just in our time together today about, I think, how far we've come really since post-pandemic and how we're all moving forward together with ideas and aspirations. I think for Pro Musica, we have our eye on our 50th anniversary, which is, you know, maybe 3-4 years away at this point. And really kind of thinking, okay, what are some of the big dreams that Pro Musica has, and starting to put some of that in place. And we're excited. We're excited for what's to come for the orchestra.
If the symphony goes ahead with their new concert hall, is that something of interest to Pro Musica in terms of being resident or participating in being in the building?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a new concert hall really could bring in new energy for all the performing arts here. And, you know, whether it's a shared space or, you know, we all need to kind of really bond together to determine what arts and culture means to the landscape of Columbus. So we haven't had too many conversations or haven't been too engaged or involved, but definitely... you know, I think the more voices, we have so many talented musicians, technicians, artists here in Columbus. You know, you have David and others who are around the country in so many different halls and getting their expertise into what it would mean for Columbus, I think would be a great opportunity.
Yeah, we'll look forward to it. You know, maybe my 70th birthday, we'll have the party there in the brand new hall with the wet paint. It's a couple of years away, not that many years away.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom Katzenmeier, what were the arts in Columbus when you took office? I know you've been in Columbus for years because you've had several very important jobs in your career, among them the Ohio State University. But when you took that GCAC job 12 years ago, what did you find then and what are you finding now?
It's kind of funny that you asked that because I had no idea. But the quality of the artists here, the talent, the strength of the organizations here. So hopefully we've just been able to add to that by bringing more funding into it in really a large way. And we certainly now lead in the state of Ohio in terms of public funding for the arts and in a lot of our other peer cities. So that's been the big change. That's what will be on my tombstone, probably. It will say, I raised your taxes for the arts.
But, you know, I remember when it was announced that you were taking the job 12 years ago, and I didn't know you. I'd met you, but I didn't know you. And I thought, well, this guy's connected. So that's why he's got this job. But then, you know what? After that, I saw you at everything. You actually went, you went to small theater companies, you went to experimental stuff, you went to the opera and the symphony. You might have wanted to say, I'm putting my feet up and watching the game. I am not leaving this house. But no, you were there, and that's been true for your entire tenure.
You know, I absolutely love that part of this job, and I hope the new person in here will do that. I feel that's a part of being a leader in the arts. You've got to really show by being there. I want to come to some of your performances, Kim, so you got to let us know when they are. Okay. So we can help you market them too. I'm going to come to Janet and David's soiree, which is going to feature Sutton Foster, mm-hmm. which is going to be an amazing event. There are so many good things coming up that I want to lead by being there. And sometimes we do a couple events a night, and it's a lot of fun, and I drag my wife and my friends along with me to them, yes.
I drag my wife, too, unless there's a women's basketball game, and then she says, you're out. Forget it. I'm at the shop with my girlfriends. But what would you say to your successor? If you had to leave a letter for the new president,
I'll leave that in my desk. I would say you got to keep it going. There's a lot of big issues that remain. Artists have a lot of needs. We have a lot of space needs. We talked about the potential for a new symphony hall, but we have a lot of needs for artist work, live space, rehearsal spaces, not just downtown, all over the city. Public art is clearly going to be a big focus of ours in this year, 2025. We're going to launch a public art plan for the city and the county. We need more public art well beyond the traditional murals, which you see all over the city now. So those are some things ahead.
Do you find yourself in the position of having, I hate to say this, but let's do it, defending the arts?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why do we need this? Why are we spending money?
Exactly. And there will be a review of all the funding this year. You're starting to hear that from the policymakers and the elected officials. And the last time this was done was in 2012. So there's going to be a review of the funding of the human service agencies, the arts, and the travel and tourism and Experience Columbus. That will happen, roll out sometime soon here. We're hearing a lot about it. We need to get ready for this. I don't think we have to defend this funding because it has become such an essential part of the city and the vibe of the city and the economic impact for the city, the attraction and retention of employees in the city. So there's going to be a lot of support, and people are seeing it in the quality of the shows that are sitting here in the room with me today. So,
and you know, one of my favorite components of GCAC is your Columbus Makes Art campaign, which I think is terrific. You're highlighting individual artists and organizations and just telling us a little bit about them and how they got to be where they are.
Right. Yeah. And that was a precursor for going to the city to get the cultural fee passed. So we knew we needed to raise the visibility of the arts, and we needed to do it by focusing on the artists, the individual artists like Kim, like David, that are working in this city, and people would warm up to that. So not mm-hmm. as event-focused, but focus on the artists and why this is a good city to live and be an artist in.
Well, let me ask Kim. I don't know, how are you from Columbus? Were you born and raised in this area?
No, okay. I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay.
But we've called Columbus home for the last 20 years.
So what is it to be an actor in Columbus, Ohio?
It's hard work to be an actor in Columbus, frankly. I was just saying when we were in the green room, you can't support yourself as an actor here in Columbus, a professional actor.
Can you do it anywhere? I mean,
it depends upon if you're in the top 10% of the working actors, right, that are doing 90% of the work. But in Columbus, it's kind of hard. But I also wanted to say thank you for mentioning rehearsal space. Rehearsal space is here in Columbus is almost impossible to find. And performance space, even for the cabaret, it was so difficult to find a space that was affordable, that you could be conscientious of your spending and your funds and how to use them.
And a place where people would go.
Yes. Yeah. And people are always like, oh, you want them downtown. Everybody wants to go downtown. But spaces are at a premium, and theaters have a very difficult time finding those spaces.
So I just want to piggyback, because it is difficult to be an actor or any kind of creative person in any city, maybe not New York and L.A., and again, if you're in the 10%. So why do you keep doing it?
You know, it's just something, it's in your soul. You have to do it. It's like an itch that has to be scratched all the time when you're a performer. I've been singing since I was 13 in public, and I'm speaking for my fellow performers that we've been given gifts, and you have to share them, and you have to be good stewards of those gifts. So it's something that we have to do it.
I didn't realize you're a classically trained singer.
I am.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was in college, they didn't have musical theater programs, so I had to study classical opera in college, and I did dinner theater at night to put myself through college. So,
you were a working actor.
Yes,
then.
Yes, I've always been a working actor.
So now, a woman of a certain age. You were telling us that you got the idea after an audition. I'm taking a class at Ohio State, and I'm 45 years older than every single student in the room. So I kind of know what that is to be in the. Am I in the right room or whatever?
Right.
They're very sweet to me. They're very, very, very good. But what do you want to do with that in the future? What do you hope to accomplish with something like that? Except giving us a wonderful evening, which you will. I've seen you do it.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's interesting. I'm privileged to have the theater company Available Light Theater Company as my fiscal sponsor for my grant. And I've done some of my most fun, good work with Available Light. They're such a wonderful group. But their board president, Joe Heimlich, said to me, we're going to be your fiscal sponsor. We're going to help you do this. But I really challenge you to think about where this goes from here, because I think this is a need in a lot of different cities, because our acting population isn't getting younger. We're getting older. So what does that look like? Maybe picking it up and this program, a woman of a certain age going, you know, picking it up and taking it to a different city and let them run with it. Something of that nature.
Because I know when I very first met you, you may not remember, we actually had a conversation about recent grad students in acting or young actors who find themselves here and they stay. They don't try. They stay and make an acting life here, which may not be as true as it was when you and I were talking about it 20 years ago or so. I hope it is. But I think that really to not use someone like you as a resource is a waste. It's just it's just silly. I mean, with that experience and those gifts, as you say. So it sounds like you are creating your own opportunities, and that's something that really one has to do. Is that fair?
I mean, it is fair. The ladies that I'm working with, I've told them I'm not casting myself in anything over the course of the year, except the cabaret is sort of the kickoff. But as far as the plays, I'm not in them. I'm producing them. And it's just about giving all of these women opportunities to do this work. So it's a platform, because I really do think we're underutilized. And we talked earlier, too, about the percentage of the tickets for any arts event are purchased by women over the age of 50, the majority of them. And we just don't see a reflection of that when we go to see those performances.
And I will venture to say, because you know me, I hate being controversial, that I think in the coming years we're going to need everybody in this room a lot more than ever, and we've always needed you. So we do need GCAC desperately. We need the music. We need the art. We need the drama, everything else. David and Jen, or David, what Pro Music is part of Pro Music's mandate, as I understand it, has always been to foster new work. Theater companies always do new plays. Ballet is always new choreography. Music, not so much. It's harder. But that has always been a big part of your mandate. Does that continue? And how do you find something that you that maybe the ink is still wet and you really have to perform this?
Yeah, I mean, like we have something like about 70 commissions, I think, in 72 now, 72 commissions. It's hard work in music, because like when you're a performer, you have to prepare all that music fresh, and you know, sometimes, and you don't sometimes really know what you get. What really helps is I'm doing this now for quite a while, and Janet is extremely helpful. We know composers that we like and that we trust. So it's a bit easier if I say, like, you know, I commission an Andy Akiho, or in May we will play a new piece by Michael Schachter that's like was written as a celebratory piece for 100 years of Rhapsody in Blue. It's already 100 years old, the Rhapsody in Blue, right? And so it's from Michael Schachter called Rhapsody, Aaron Deal, who is originally from Columbus.
Yeah,
he's going to be the pianist.
Fantastic, yeah.
And so that's going to be that's going to be great. And you know, knowing Schachter's work, we can estimate it's going to be a really good work. I got to see the score recently, and I'm like, yeah, I could confirm that this is going to be great. So that helps if you know who is going to write. But there is always a bit of a thrill in it, you know, because when you do a world premiere, you really don't know how the piece is going to turn out.
But
right?
You have for years, Janet and David and the orchestra have had the trust of the audience to show up and listen to something they've never heard before.
I think so. I think also we tried very much over the last 10 years to find a certain way of contemporary music that we present, right? So that when our audience comes to the hall, they kind of like know about which type of composers we like, who we like to collaborate with. And again, if names come again, like an Andy Akiho, like who came just the second time this year with his new cello concerto, you find a certain kinship with the composer. You see them, they often join us on stage. We have the composer performer program where the composer themselves play their own work with us. And you know what to expect. It's like an old friend.
But they also know what you need. They know what you're already. Janet Chen is here to share the mic, folks. Be nice, share.
No, I just wanted to add that, I do think that we feel that there's a commitment to the orchestra being a platform for composers to produce and give their voice, because a composer can write, but if there's no outlet for it, then it goes nowhere. So, you know, we really think about our responsibility to give the voice for the future of our genre. But I think, kind of going back to your question about trust, it is a trusting process between the audience, the musicians, through David, the composer, because you're kind of birthing something together. And I think we've just been really fortunate that we were so committed to commission since day one that audiences know when they come, they might hear something that they're completely unfamiliar. They may be like, I'm not sure if I like that, but it's balanced by something that they are familiar with.
There's a Mozart symphony. There's a Mendelssohn piece.
And you can't get that if you're sitting in your living room, right listening to a CD. And we've just been fortunate to have, at this point, composers that seek us out. Hey, you know, I hear you're incredibly passionate about commissioning. I'm a composer. We have young composers, student composers, who ask us for advice on how to get their music produced. And that's a really wonderful feeling. And when you world premiere John Batiste's new piano concerto, that's also pretty cool too. So
that was good.
There's a lot of fun in that.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're going to take a quick break and come back with one more segment, Arts and Culture in Central Ohio. We could talk for 3 hours, but we won't. Don't go away.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
We are back with more Arts and Culture in Central Ohio. I'm Christopher Purdy with Janet Chen, who was the CEO of ProMusica, with David Donsmeyer, who was the music director of ProMusica, with everybody's CEO but me. Tom Katzenmeyer is the president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Kim Garrison-Hopcraft is an actor, producer, singer, classically trained singer, cabaret artist, and you and I were talking off mic. This is interesting. You're in rehearsal now for something, and we were talking about the paucity of rehearsal space.
Yes.
And what are you rehearsing, and where are you rehearsing it?
Yes. So I am privileged to be a part of the cast of Into the Woods, which is the Nationwide Children's Hospital Butterfly Guild show, starring Nina West. And we are rehearsing in it's in an empty storefront space in a strip mall in Westerville, which is quite a nice space, actually, when there's, you know, it's heated in bathrooms, and they've taped out the whole set and stage on the floor. But it's really fascinating that even a play like this, this huge musical, and we're rehearsing in a storefront, because there's really just no spaces.
In Westerville. Yeah. No offense to what we love Westerville.
Yeah, we love Westerville. I live in Westerville. Yeah. We love Westerville. So, yeah. But, yeah, there's no space. But we're privileged and honored to have the space to work in.
Now, while we're on the subject of, first of all, the Butterfly Guild's very important.
Very.
And their show. So talk about what they are and the upcoming production and your role in it.
Yeah, so this would be my third show that I've been involved with the Butterfly Guild, which is one of their hospital's largest fundraisers to raise money for the palliative care and hospice unit of the hospital. And it is my understanding that we are one of the only children's hospitals that have a palliative care unit. So so the kids can stay home and you know, massages and music therapy and anything that they might need. So that's what the tickets go to raise money for that. So it's a really wonderful cause.
And they're always fantastic shows. They're brilliantly done. They're big, big,
huge
musicals.
The voices in this are absolutely incredible. I'm so privileged to be involved. David Baggett is the director. Nina West is playing the witch. I am playing the evil stepmother.
No.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not typecasting.
No, not at all.
That's a challenge for you.
I mean, absolutely. I'm not that evil.
And that's in March. We're going to do a show about them in February because I'm very excited about the Buttercup. Their productions are always first class.
It's beautiful.
Thank you for reminding that, talking about the need for more space, the need for rehearsal space. What's the story on the church on Third next to the Ohio Theater? I know Kappa for years has been talking about doing something with
Kappa it. Kappa has purchased it. They are over $10 million in their fundraising campaign. So the work on that will begin this year. We'll have a new
venue.
Oh,
really? So that's a go?
Yeah, it's a go. Absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's a go. Yeah, absolutely.
Great bones in that in that church. It's terrific. Tell me more, Tom Katzenmeier, about GCAC's grant projects, and really, who decides who gets money, and how is that decision made?
So we have a great. It starts with our grants staff, which is led by Allison Barrett. Great group of four people. That's where it comes in. The grants are approved by the board, and Kim has recently benefited from this. We have a community grant making project process now, where twice in the past year, we had community members come in and review grants, and Kim got her award from that process. It's an equity initiative of ours to really open the place up so there's no mystery in how we're granting out these funds. And that was a wonderful experience for us, and we'll do that again twice in 2025 also.
Well, Kim, as someone who got a grant, what was that process like? What did you have to do?
Yeah, I have to say, Tom's staff was brilliant.
They
were great to work with, so receptive to any questions, and they had workshops, online workshops where we could go and walk through the whole grant process. It's a very I had never written a grant before. It's a really big deal. I had some counsel through some friends my theater friends who have done it, but really, The staff made it very easy, and I love the community grant program. I'm a grant reader for the Women's Fund of Central Ohio.
It's exactly like that, basically.
And it's exactly like that. It's a wonderful opportunity for people to be open to all the different things that are going on in the city that you really have no idea and how the monies will be impacted.
Well, you said, Tom, again, that part of what GCAC does is to help people market themselves. Is that
Yes, absolutely. That's it. You can get a grants for individual artists to do that. We also have a program called Navigators, where we have 28 individuals who represent us in the community and carry these messages out into the community.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and they are compensated for that. We pay their expenses. It's an incredible program. Puts us in front of a lot of new artists and a lot of new projects. That's why we hear about new projects too. So
you probably have a lot of dynamic young people doing
we
that.
We totally
that
do.
Work.
Much younger than me, and it's a richly diverse group of people.
See, I was going to ask him if I could do it, but you know, that's the funniest thing in having grandpa go out and. So one of the things too. Go ahead, Janet.
I just wanted to add, because we're here in this room, we all want Tom Katzenmeier to unretire.
Yeah. I know.
But just to go on the record, I know so many of our fellow colleagues feel this way, but what Tom Katzenmeier has done to transform the arts and cultural landscape in Columbus is unprecedented. Yeah. And we are just so grateful for all that you've done.
Thank you, Janet.
From the bottom up, and truly. So,
but and what impressed me is A, he goes to everything, and B, he knows people's names. You know, not the higher profile people like in this room, but he knows people. He just knows. He greets people by name who are, you know, struggling to get ahead and to do something, to create something. And I think that means a lot to people when someone like you does that. That's very encouraging. And that's one of the things you're good at. So, do unretire.
I met Tom at parties where we would talk, and I was like, oh, so nice that you came here, and he told me he came from another event.
Oh, sure.
Then he was with us, and then he said, like, oh, I'm sorry, I have to leave. I'm going to another event. So he would do 3-4 events in one evening so that he could be with everybody.
Yeah,
that's unique.
That doesn't always happen. So that's fantastic. So David Dansmeyer, now you're also in Oregon. Tell us about your work in Oregon.
Yeah, I'm the music director of the Oregon Symphony, which is one of the biggest symphony orchestras in America. And it's an interesting work. I think what I love about the ProMusica here is we are so nimble, and things can happen so quickly. And in a big symphony orchestra, it all takes a little bit longer time to change. But now I'm there in my 4th season, and I really notice that, you know, we have a good direction. We focus a bit on Portland composers there, and then of course of the big symphonic works. But it's nice, like, you know, once you're there for a while, you see, oh, actually, I do affect change, and things are going in a direction.
Tell me about where you perform in Oregon and your audience.
Yeah, we do perform in a hall called the Arlen Schnitzer Hall, which is a 2,800 seat hall. Talking about big halls, but we are one of the orchestras with the highest audience numbers. We pretty regularly sell out. We do at the moment triples, so 3 concerts on every program. And I would say every evening between 1,500 to 2,800 people in the hall, depending on the program and the artist. We are quite unique in the way that we get half of our income, of our budget, from earned revenue. So there is a quite enthusiastic crowd there. But we also see here with ProMusica, thankfully, which is great, that even post pandemic we're growing our audience, and we, you know, we get more and more new people also in, and loyal subscribers, so it's good.
There was a trend where if you did new work, you did it because it was good for you. Now people are doing it because it does bring people in. It just creates some excitement there. Janet, can you give us an idea of the future? What's going on, and also of your outreach, because you generally, most of us will go to the Southern Theater to hear your concerts,
but
there's more to it than that.
Yeah, no, there's so much work that we're doing, and so proud of that we do behind the scenes. You know, one of our newest programs now in its 3rd year is we're working with infants and toddlers. Mm-hmm. So with the early childhood development learning centers, so 20-week program, 4 instrument sections, and we go into, right now I think it's 6 classrooms, and it's a 20 to 30 minute program, and basically the musician, there's a curriculum where we're focusing on socio-emotional skills, just what does loud mean, what does soft mean, what is movement, and these are like babies and like 1-year-old. And this is now again into our 3rd year. And we start the program every year and we assess the littles, we call them the littles, as to sort of where they are on the scale of all these specific, you know, development skills. And then at the end of the program, we assess them again and we see really the change in all these elements, which is so cool.
I was going to ask you, given that they're so little, what kind of, what are your goals maybe over a 6 or 7 week program? What do you want them to be doing?
Well, a lot of it, what we see most obviously is, so for example, when we bring in our brass week, right, we've got Tony on the trombone, these little kids, they've never seen an instrument. They've never seen an instrument that big. They've never seen
bigger than they are. A lot bigger than they are.
Yep. How they blow into it, and so over the each instrument has 5 weeks. So over that, they start to become much more familiar. They start to do things like, you know, like trying to blow bubbles, and that's all that we're looking for is just how to use music and access so that the littles, they start growing and building sort of these development skills that ultimately are super important for
what I like growth. To say is you get to see the lights go on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a great gift that you all do. I mean, that people who are creative get to do that. You get to see that happen.
Sometimes at first they cry because it's so loud and they're like, ah! By the time the second week comes, they're crawling in your lap because they're touching the instruments and like, it's just such a heartwarming program, which we love.
Do the parents leave them with you and head for a bar? And
yeah.
Say, call me, we'll do lunch.
So that program.
Where does that happen?
We're right now working with the Columbus Early Learning.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Early Learning Centers. We started with Sprout 5. They've sadly gone away. But we saw so much transformation and excitement that we felt we needed to continue this program.
How did ProMusica get involved with that? Did they approach you, or was it an idea that came from your office?
We had always been very fascinated with music and early childhood because we all say, right, so if you expose a young person to music, like the chance of them coming to concerts, we all know that there's truth in that. So we were like, well, what if we start bringing these to infants and toddlers, right? I mean, why not? And we started thinking about how can we actually test this? How can we eventually make this more of a national sort of movement where music and orchestras can really start making, an impact in that way? So it kind of came together from both ends. We reached out to Sprout 5 at that point. They're very committed to it. And we're all in now. So,
That's something organizations have talked about for years, but you're actually doing it.
Yeah.
There's a difference. Tom Katzenberg, do you see what your cousin you're doing
Absolutely.
Here?
Absolutely. We love that.
Do you
program.
See what GCAC mm-hmm. is doing here? I hadn't heard about that before. I'm fascinated by that. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And David Dunsmore, I'm sure the kids adore him anyway. So
it's so cute doesn't even describe it. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And it adds on our players forward where we have elementary and middle schoolers with violins. We have a lot of instruments in the hands of young people who learn, and we have teachers who teach them the instruments in the schools. So that was the program that started it, and now the little kids is an extension nearly of that, and we want to continue to grow that. So we have ideas so that we have from the birth basically until they are 18 or so. That would be the goal long term.
Well, your two kids have two parents as musicians, so I mean, which could be good or could be bad. Do your kids have the bug, or are they normal?
So my son is in the Barca Soccer Academy, so he will become probably a professional soccer player. So he has the bug of determination and hard work and kind of going for it. My daughter plays the flute very well, but fortunately she doesn't want to become a flute player. So I'm like, that's fine. Janet is a flute player.
She'll go to medical school and they'll.
I think she wants to become a realtor broker at the moment. So
good.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Whatever.
I always said to my kids, whatever you're passionate about, whatever you fancy, just do it properly. Just throw yourself in there and just do it properly.
And you need to take care of your dad in his old age. That's all.
Yes, exactly. I did mention that.
I want to make sure I come back to Kim Garrison Hopcraft, A Woman of a Certain Age, which is a project that you're beginning. The kickoff is
Saturday, February the 8th at Understory.
Okay. How do one get tickets?
You can go to ticketsource.com and just put in A Woman of a Certain Age.
And that is the intro, but there's going to be a lot more going on. What are the plays you're planning to?
Yeah, we've chosen three plays. I've worked with all the women. We've had readings at my house since August. And we're doing, hopefully we're doing a play called According to the Chorus by Arlene Hutton. Chamber Music by Arthur Kopik.
I know that.
And a very, very new play that I'm hoping to get the rights for called What Springs Forth by Carrie Sim.
Carrie Sims, give her the rights. Okay. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Week. And my thanks to Tom Katzenmeyer. My thanks to Kim Garrison Hopcraft. My thanks to Janet Chen and David Donsmeyer. Come to the Southern Theater Saturday or Sunday night and hear music by Mendelssohn with ProMusica. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for making radio with us. I'm Christopher Purdy. Have a great day. Go to concerts.